You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
579 Mew 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 Book Club, Mew 1010 Book Club, Mutiny Book Club, Book. Mew 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 Book Club, Mew 1010.
Where I just was the road of hell. Black boiling dirt and burning diesel smoke. Nothing burns hot as diesel. People by the side run over, squashed, killed, and dead. Devil laughing so close I saw the veins in his teeth. You won't get a hold of me. My ticket says to Texas. He rolled the stone aside, and in the cave, the mysteries flitted like bats and insects. Here the answers to everything, said the devil. Like UFOs and life beyond the grave. Like what was Elvis thinking? What was Elvis thinking and feeling in those last dark days? Like just who masterminded JFK? And the cave was his mouth, like a bathroom full of stink, and his tongue popped with cheap sweat. Yeah, boy, he dragged me down to his jamboree, dragged me down through the toilet formerly known as my life, down through this nest of talking spiders known as my head, down through the bottom of my grave with my name spelled wrong on the stone. Actually, that's let's cut it off there, because that's one of my favorite recurring motifs of this story. That was a selection from Largesse of the Sea Maiden by Dennis Johnson. Welcome to the Mutiny Book Club podcast. I'm your host, Byron Graham. Let's do intros.
Yeah, I'm co-host Jen Colick. I am actually a librarian again. As of tomorrow, I got a new job. Yeah, it's a corporate 9-to-5 thing, so I don't have to fucking talk to no one, and nice. I don't have to work nights and weekends. It's ideal. Perfect. Yeah.
And our guest,
Nate Brown. Hello, everybody.
Comedian. Run some shows, yes. Host some open mics.
Running a show at Elliot's Martini Bar tonight.
Oh, nice.
Ooh.
It's a very busy day.
I'm a comedian as well. I also write for the Westward Alternative Weekly Newspaper. And I host this here podcast that you're listening to right now, Mutiny Book Club. Thanks, Kenneth, my brother, for listening. That's the only person who does.
Hi, Kenneth.
Good to meet you, Kenneth.
This was our first short story collection, The Largesse of the Sea Maiden by Dennis Johnson. Also our first posthumously published book. Mm. What were you guys' first impressions? Overall review? Maybe even a letter grade? Or is that too reductive for this podcast?
I mean, I'll say this. What's up with all the Elvis stuff? I liked it.
There's a lot of Elvis stuff.
I think that was one of my favorite stories of the bunch was Doppelganger Poltergeist.
Mm-hmm. That one didn't... I'm not an Elvis... I don't know. In the words of Chuck D, the sucker was racist. So
no,
I'm
fucking... Not. Like, I hate Elvis.
Yeah.
But it's...
I get the fascination. Like, he's a tragic figure. There's some Oedipal stuff going on.
I just liked the story. I liked the... I think it's because of the... There is a little bit of, like, a true crime element to it, where it's, like, a little bit of conspiracy, a little bit of, like, you know, this person was maybe murdered, and, like, someone else took his place, and, like, I just thought it was a cool story.
Yeah. Conspiracy theories are, like, inherently interesting, even if they're, like, totally made up, totally, and based on false, like, mm-hmm. premises that, like... It's interesting to read a theory, even if... I meant to, like, Google mm-hmm. more about, you know, was there really a twin that died? And
I believe that's... That part is true. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The thing I was taken by was how an otherwise intelligent person can get so wrapped up in something so bonkers to where he's, like, going bankrupt to buy proof of Elvis's twin, you know, and digging up graves.
Yeah.
$8,500. Stuff like that happens all the time, though.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think that
otherwise, smart people do dumb shit all the time.
Or, yeah, I mean...
I don't want to say waste their lives doing
stupid shit. Otherwise,
smart
person might be even uniquely susceptible to a conspiracy theory because it's like a puzzle for them to solve.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also because I think a lot of smart people think they're too smart to get involved in something dumb.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of overestimate their own intelligence. They're like, oh, this sounds cool. It must be legit.
So what were you guys' favorite stories? The names of the stories, just so we are... and I have to flip them open because this is great. The Largesse of the Sea Maiden, which is the first one. which was published in 2014 separately, I think in the New Yorker. Starlight on Idaho is the second one. Strangler Bob, third one. Triumph Over the Grave. And the one we were just talking about is Doppelganger or Poltergeist. That's the one with Elvis. Which ones were your favorites? Nate.
I feel like I'd rank them almost in reverse order. I couldn't tell if I was just like getting more used to his voice or whatever. But okay. Like the first story I was like a little bit meh on, but maybe I was just getting used to his style, or I don't know. It just felt a little aimless or something. But I really liked the one you read a passage from. I think that was Starlight. The one just about the guy in recovery. And I don't know. I quit drinking 2.5 months ago. I don't think I was ever like an alcoholic. But
yeah, you didn't need to take antabuse. There was a high five exchanged.
High five for quitting drinking.
No, high even, five no, for even you, though Byron, I'm you
a,
quit smoking.
I'm yet. A degenerate and I support it. No, so don't.
Yeah, and I don't think I never had any of the level of issues that these people did. But you know, there's still things you can identify with and just like good descriptions.
You don't have to be an alcoholic to say like I think I'm gonna stop drinking for a while. Like you know,
it's bad for you. It makes you feel bad later. Mm-hmm. It's
like I did the same thing like in the last couple of years, where it's just like, this makes me feel like crap, and it's probably gonna give me cancer. Maybe I'll just cool it for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's enough reason.
Yeah. No, I'm hoping I don't have to have, like, a serious brush with death before I'm prompted to make some healthier choices.
This is actually an intervention, death, Byron. Yeah.
This whole, it's been a year-long ruse.
Yes, it has been.
At the beginning, though, there was probably some cause for concern. There were, like, 3 months in a row where I was hungover out of my gourd. And somehow made sense when I talked about books.
Those were actually pretty good episodes. Not that I'm condoning.
No. I'm high functioning. I'm a high functioning whatever I am. High functioning degenerate. We'll leave it at that because that sounds like it's still fun.
Yeah.
I don't think I wasn't reading when I was drinking, and like if just like the two or three days after, I was just felt like such a dummy. Like my just brain wasn't working.
Sure.
I wouldn't write jokes or anything or work on any aspect of comedy, and so it's just like
no. I've noticed a lot of people get sharper and funnier when they quit.
Mm-hmm. A lot of my favorite comedians seem to have gone. So
Mulaney's
go-to example.
Which were your favorites, and which were your favorite short stories?
I think I probably agree with Nate, actually, that I like in reverse order is probably, like, I really like the last two, and the first three were just kind of, I mean, number one, like, you're kind of a creep, the first story, but also just, like, tell me something I don't fucking know.
Yeah.
You know?
That's, I had, kind of opposite preferences. I liked all of them. Mm-hmm. I think I admired Largesse of the Sea Maiden more than enjoyed it a little bit.
Okay.
But I liked the
just in like a technical kind of way.
Yeah, I liked how they were the I liked the sort of unconnected anecdote of, you know, like the way that you would just be thinking about, you know, random things that happened. Mm-hmm.
Slice of life.
And I liked that he was sort of an ass. I liked that he was an ad man, too, for some reason. Because that is, like, that's, you know,
well,
for
it's
a
typical
creative,
manipulative
for
sociopath behavior.
You need to be creative to do it, and it's not fulfilling
apart.
At all. It's Ginny and Jenny. What are these
supposed to do? You have a conversation with
a
woman, and you don't know which ex-wife she is. Throw yourself off a fucking bridge.
I feel
what
like he was just
asshole.
Like senile or something.
Yeah, I think there was an element of that in there too.
He kept like misreading signs and like I mean
maybe.
Weren't all like all his friends dying or something. It's just I think he was like near the end and
yeah, I liked his friendship with the artist. I liked that it was like that. I liked that artist's funeral that where like nobody knew each other and they were like, yeah, he's just the guy I ran into at the coffee shop, like. I there was something about that I really liked.
I did like that character, now that I think about it.
Yeah, there was something in each story that, you know, I read this all in a day, and again, it's been like 3 weeks since I've read it, so usually longer than...
That was going to be my next question. Today?
No. I had basically finished this when we decided that this was the book for the month.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Because I wanted to do an also read... And then I wanted to do this as an also read because it was nice and short. And then I got busy in Game of Thrones and Avengers, so I'm glad we picked this one. My favorite one was Starlight Over Idaho. I liked Strangler Bob a lot. Mm-hmm. The last two kind of blended together to me because they're both about professors.
And death.
I mean, the whole book, it's, you know, this book is the reason the word elegiac exists. Like, every single story is haunted by death, even the ones that don't seem like they are at first. Like, Strangler Bob, it isn't until the last page where the bodies start piling up.
I didn't realize he was dead. Like, I almost Googled whether
oh, really?
He had died since this, because it does feel like a, you know, a last book. There's so many, so much.
I think, like, this is the sort of last book most authors dream of, like, to being able to have enough time to get this out there before the end.
Right. It was, really good for, you know, I don't know how old he was when he died, but...
Like, 67. Yeah, so, like, not young, but, you know, people are living longer than that these days.
Not in his 80s or whatever.
No.
And, you know, he lived pretty hard. He was a pretty serious drug addict, alcoholic, and he died of liver cancer, so I'm assuming there's a correlation there.
He made it pretty far, considering.
I mean, he was in recovery for most of his life. He was a big AA guy. He was, like a lot of AA people tend to be, religious.
Yeah. But even considering, like, the amount of times that he almost died while he was... like, actively using.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing he made it to 67.
And he was already, like, a published author when he was at the depths of his addiction. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, nothing is worse for an addiction than steady funding. Like, that's real bad. Being able to afford it, it's hard to let go of. So, posthumous congratulations are in order for... Because, especially heroin, Jesus Christ, what a...
Yeah.
What a tough thing to get over.
Yeah, I don't know. That's crazy. He was a heroin addict. I did feel like he had drug experience even before I got to the parts about, like, LSD and stuff. I was like, there's certain, like, lines where it's, like, visual disturbances and stuff. And I'm like, that is a little acid trippy.
I liked that, but I was like, what a terrible place to do LSD. In prison? What? No, don't do it there. There's nothing cool to look at. You're just alone with your thoughts in the dark. It seems terrifying.
There's a documentary about, like, I think called The Sunshine Makers, about these dudes who, like, made most of the acid in the 60s or whatever, and one of them ended up in prison, and they, like, snuck it in, but they would make this, like, little shrine in the prison cell that had, like, a Buddha and, like, candles, and they would just, like, all just stare at that the entire time they were tripping, so they wouldn't have to be as imprisoned.
That sounds a little better.
I mean...
the only way to have a semi-good trip while in prison.
Take those glimmers of hope where you can get them. Because, prison's the worst.
I can't imagine a worse situation to be in.
I've been in jail for, like, 30 hours. And being in anything like that, like, this is the rest of my life. Like, bars and somebody telling me where to go. It's a nightmare. This is the worst thing.
That is, like one of my go-to most common nightmares is going to be in prison. It's just been in the back. I think it's in my subconscious that I will be in prison at some point, and I don't know for what. I'm like, I'm fairly straight edge, but it's going to happen, I think. It's just, it's meant
falsely
to be.
Falsely accused. So I'm not very familiar. Like, I'd never read Dennis Johnson before. I'm guessing you haven't. You have?
Yeah.
And you have misgivings.
Well, I've read a fair... I mean, he's published, like...
20, yeah.
Like, 20 books or something.
Poetry,
like a bunch of novels.
Plays,
poetry. And I have... I have a couple of books of his poetry, which is pretty good. And I always kind of wanted to read Tree of Spoke, but I never got around to it. But
Jesus Son, probably.
Jesus Son, Resuscitation of a Hanged Man, Already Dead, I think, was the other one. Like, all in my early 20s, basically.
Okay.
And, of course, I mean, if you start with Jesus Son, you're probably fucking ruined for anything else that he's written, because it is the best thing that he's ever written.
Yeah.
Like, it's the thing that he's famous for. But it is also the kind of thing that, like, you read in your early 20s. It's kind of like Kerouac or something, where, okay, like, if you read in your early 20s, like, you're probably going to think it's brilliant and love it the rest of your life. And if you read it any later than that, you're probably going to be like, there's something wrong with this person.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm able to think there's something wrong with the person and still be able to, I don't know, I can tap into that early 20s mindset pretty easily.
Yeah.
At least to enjoy a work of art.
I mean, for me, though, it's more like this person doesn't think women are people because there aren't any agency in his work. Like,
that's
kind of what I'm getting at.
That's that definitely applies in Largesse of the Sea Maiden. There are barely even
just wives and ex-wives.
Yeah, there's barely even dialogue.
It's like women he can't tell apart, or like women who are being sexually humiliated at parties, or women who are, you know,
yeah, the nub thing,
part of the dressing. Yeah.
I didn't care for that at all.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. I kind of feel like the throwaway line at the end of like, oh, they got married 6 months later is just like, you're trying to make me feel good about something that made me sick to my stomach. And
yeah.
It's not working.
I don't know. I don't know if it was, I didn't necessarily interpret it. I don't think that it was like co-signing that it was all right. It was just like fucking humans, right? You know, like that's what, you know, that's the way I took it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, if you wanted a big reductive summary of his whole literary work, it's like, fucking humans, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's...
I mean,
that's
everyone's a piece of shit. Like,
yeah.
That's, you know. But I think there... It was a little disappointing to me, because there is so much else going on in his work. It's almost like I expected better from him.
Okay.
Or it didn't, like, the rest of his work hasn't aged as well for me as I was hoping it would. Because, I mean, someone like Hera, like, it's obvious that he just has his head up his ass.
Yeah.
And, like, doesn't really give a shit about anyone else, and that's all his entire body of work is about. So you don't really expect anything else from someone like that. But...
Yeah, I've known... All of the, in each of these five stories, none of the narrators stray too far from what Dennis Johnson's experience or perspective would be.
Right.
Like, he's been in jail, he's been in rehab, he's been, you know, a
shitty professor.
He's been a shitty. That's one thing, and I think that it might be part of why he's got such a, like, vaunted literary reputation is because so many of his stories are about... Or at least these last two are about writers and MFA professors, which is a big pet peeve of mine. I hate books about writers, and I especially hate books about the MFA world, because it's so navel-gazing, and it's so like, who is this even for? Oh, I get it. The other rich guy reviewing your book.
Right. Who you were in an MFA program with.
Exactly, yeah. I think great writers come out of them, obviously, but I couldn't care less about... reading about what these guys... At least he doesn't fuck one of his students.
I mean, how do you know?
There's no story about that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Do you follow that one? It's on Twitter. Like, it's an MFA writer or something. It's just like an MFA student, and it's all just examples.
It's like a parody of, yeah.
This navel-gazing stuff. And I'm glad I didn't think of it before going into these stories, because it's true that half of them are just about him being a writer and going through that.
I mean,
he kind of
got away with it as because of the focus on the one thing that I hadn't really seen before, because it was how, like, they're kind of all they have at the end.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I found touching in a way, because at the end, comedians are probably going to be all I have. Like, oh boy, what about
your dogs?
They're 10 years old. I don't know.
Adopting dogs.
Yeah.
They're healthy. They just went to the vet, but yeah, I mean, also, like, a dog can't check me out of the hospital.
That's true. They can't.
I want to
take this opportunity to also sorry to interrupt, Nate. I'm sure you're saying something very tough. I just want to, you know, you could really stand to put more dog pictures on your Instagram.
Yeah,
that's the main reason I followed you on Instagram.
I need to get some more out there. I don't want to flood the feed.
There's no such thing as too... I mean, I post almost all cat pictures.
Fair enough.
No one's telling me they're getting sick of them. That's all I'm gonna say. I think, I don't know, part of the problem that I think I have with, like, Dennis Johnson and a lot of writers like him,
mm-hmm.
is it's a very, like, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because it's one of those things where it's a lot of people kind of just writing what they know.
Yeah.
Like, the world that you know about. And there is a certain depth that you can get to when you are writing about the world that you know and that you live in for your whole life.
Yeah.
That most of the time, a person of, like, average, like, an averagely talented writer, like, you can't do that with stuff that you haven't, that is not really part of your experience.
Yeah.
But then there's people like Anthony Mara, who wrote a novel and a linked short story collection, completely in Chechnya,
mm-hmm.
which, because he wanted to read a novel about Chechnya, and yeah. he couldn't find one.
Yeah.
So he wrote one in his 20s.
And he's not
never
he's
having
not
been there.
Okay, yeah.
Like, he, not even like he's not Chechen, like, he's never been there.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think
and
that's,
it's so incredibly detailed.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think it is kind of a matter of talent, but I think it's also a matter of, like, what you value.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
There's
it's something that, like, it annoys me, but I can't entirely, like, turn my back on them.
Sure.
You know?
I feel like it might, if there were just more other examples, because this, you know, the bookshelves are flooded with this perspective.
Right.
I think this is a particularly excellent example of it. Like, the mm-hmm. the prose is so spare, it's like there's not a wasted word, and there's so many, like, the headstone with my name spelled wrong. Like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
that image recurs a couple times throughout that story. I just, like, that, it, I don't know, to be able to create the such a haunting image with a sentence fragment,
yeah.
I think takes a very skilled writer. But yeah, it is the perspective of the recovered junkie turned literary, you know, mm-hmm. professor. But
yeah.
that's another
me that I wasn't coming in with, like, all this, like, any biographical yeah. detail. I knew mm-hmm. that I'd seen the name. That was about it, and I'd heard it maybe recommended or something. But I didn't really know that he was an addict in real life or any. You know, I suspected that a lot
yeah.
of this was autobiographical mm-hmm. at a certain point, but. I could read some of these stories not knowing, like,
yeah.
oh, he's practically been in this exact circumstance, and he's mm-hmm. he's just, like, self-involved in that way, and can't write something about not him.
I think that's the best way to go in. That's sort
yeah.
of how, I, other than Sam, like, repeatedly recommending that I read Jesus' Son.
Yeah. Which honestly, you still should.
I should.
Like, he's a good writer.
I'll probably do
thing.
It for my ulcer
yeah.
next month, because it's a fleet 160 pages.
It's literally fits in your pocket.
Yeah.
I can lend it to you, actually.
Okay.
I still have my copy.
But I think, like, the focus on, you know, just keep your, you know, stick to your own experience is another AA thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. We're, like, you don't take other people's inventory as an expression. I was court ordered to AA meetings for a while, so I've
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That
makes sense. Like, just you mind your own shit and don't
yes.
worry about what
yeah.
anyone else is doing with their shit.
Yeah, and I think
which is probably good advice to everyone of you.
Yeah, it's no. There's I
okay.
There's a cultiness to it and a religiosity that I didn't care for, but there's
yeah.
great fucking stories and you know, fascinating people. And, like, there are some people, like, this is their, you know, buoy and stormy seat. They'd be fucked without
mm-hmm.
it. So I have a lot of respect for AA, even though I'm very glad, you know, I was very glad when the coordinator signed my last court order, and I didn't have to go anymore.
I went to a couple meetings voluntarily, just
oh,
out of curiosity,
yeah.
and it is super interesting, just, like, the variety of people that will be in there, and I don't feel like I came away feeling like I didn't really need it to quit.
Yeah.
I'm 2.5 months in without going to AA pretty much, so I didn't really need it, but it was interesting, and they are, like, you know, super smart and
mm-hmm.
cool people in there that, yeah, and I feel like there is, like, wisdom and
yeah.
in a lot of what AA teaches, even if it is not like scientifically proven that well, like that it's the best recovery option or whatever, but
But yeah, for the people that need, I mean, there's problems with it too. I think that the like all or nothing mentality makes it worse when people relapse and it's like harder to get back.
Just the idea that you're always an alcoholic and you're always gonna potentially relapse, and it's like, I don't, now that I'm 2.5 months, like I don't really crave alcohol that much. Yeah. I'm not like constantly thinking about it, or, and I feel like if I were just going to meetings, I would be thinking about it a lot more and be more tempted almost.
Well, there's, in the first chapter of the big book, they do like, they're pretty specific about delineating what makes, distinguishes a heavy drinker from an alcoholic, where they're like, try these tests for yourself. Like, go out drinking and then stop. If you can't stop, you might got a problem. It's very 1930s language, too. It's like, we even have some Muslims, you know.
Oh, my God.
Which, for the time, very progressive. But
they gave me, like, a mini one, book. Yeah. And I read a little bit of that. There is, like, a section about how to handle your wives. Like, it wasn't meant for women, so it's like...
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a whole chapter, Two Wives.
Yes. Which I skipped. Because it's so 1930s.
Oh, it's incredibly patronizing.
I can't believe they haven't updated it more, but that's probably part of the cultiness. It's just like...
Yeah, there's no...
I can believe it.
They do update the personal stories in the end.
Because,
I had this sponsor who had like 3 editions, and you go back and read some of the old ones, and they're even more like, I was drinking bathtub gin with, you know.
Jesus.
Although now they have one where it's like a guy, he's like from the Mi'kmaq, and it's so silly. Where he's like, we have these creatures called Booglamajews, and I felt like my alcoholism was a Booglamajew. And I was like, all right, guys. They're very silly, and there's a self-seriousness about it that's ripe for comedy. But there are also meetings that, like, I preferred the storytelling meetings, which was like, listening to the narrators, or We Still Like You. It's just a great... Because they're just doing, like, here's all the terrible stuff I did.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get enough. I love it. It's like, if I keep doing this, I'm going to start stealing these stories. I need to stop.
My first meeting was actually that. Like, just a guy, 45 minutes.
Yeah. I loved that. Yeah. I would try to go to those.
Minutes? Yeah. It was,
Jesus Christ.
It felt a little long. I think he went long, too. Like, he felt a little bit... I was judging a little bit how long he went. But it was an interesting story.
It's like, can I light this guy?
I missed that power. I should have lit him. Just immediately get kicked out.
Let's talk about the Elvis.
Can we please talk about Elvis?
I think it's, like, this is a pretty, pretty serious book. But the very last words of the last book this guy wrote in his entire life is Elvisly yours, which I think is delightful.
Yeah, it's really witty.
This one, it was, I don't know if it was my least favorite, but I thought, I just couldn't get into it as much. I was intrigued briefly by how his poetry collection sort of parodied the professor who was the Elvis Obsessive's poetry collection parodied the professor as the protagonist of the story. Mm-hmm. Try picking that sentence apart. they never really follow up on that.
Well, they kind of do.
The second time.
I mean, the name comes up.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, as the twin. The
but also,
twin.
Like, it's... Well, okay, so, I mean, number one. If you don't like the conspiracy stuff, you're going to have a bad time with Thomas Pynchon.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. But secondly, no, I just loved it because by the end, I mean, I was like, well, maybe it's true, you know?
Since I didn't Google it, I was like, this might... A lot of this might be close to accurate. I don't know.
Maybe if I knew more about Elvis, I would have been more engaged in it, but...
I know close to nothing, but...
I did know that he
probably made it more interesting.
A stillborn twin. I had never heard the term also twinless twin before. And that is probably the saddest phrase I've ever heard in English.
Yeah.
That is so devastatingly lonely. Yeah. Like, I can't... It breaks my heart.
I think I teared up even when it kind of tied together that his obsession with Elvis was mainly a way of grieving and obsessing and
about his
thinking
brother.
About his brother.
Yeah.
And I guess also about 9/11 to some extent.
That took me by surprise. It's just like, oh, we're going to do 9/11? Okay. Just throw 9/11 in there.
It is like the first story where it's like, it is, out of nowhere, a new aspect of it. That is something I liked about it. It doesn't go in all the directions you're expecting. Each story is like, has a new element that you're not waiting for and that comes to be.
They unfold like memories where it's like there's rhyming passages and there's like a cohesive voice bringing it all together. But it's sort of just like, oh yeah, now this is on my mind, especially Largesse of the Sea Maiden. Where it's just like a sort of 10 loosely interconnected anecdotes about death. I don't know why I liked that one more than you guys, but I think the narrator was, I don't think you're meant to like the guy.
No, I know that you're not meant to like the guy, but I have had enough of that perspective.
Okay.
And it's also, like, been enough of that perspective in his work. I also just realized, you guys haven't read it, so you don't know, there's a character from Jesus' Son in this book.
Yeah, there's Dink, right?
No.
Oh.
Dun-Dun.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. Because that was one of the things...
He either dies or kills someone in Jesus' Son, and I don't remember what... Yeah, I was going to go back and look, and then I forgot. But I was just like, oh, I remember this dude. Like,
well, I read one of the reviews I read was saying that Dink might be Fuckhead from Jesus' Son.
He might be.
And I also people were critical of that story, and I wonder if I had read Jesus' Son, if I would have liked the Starlight and Strangler Bob less, because I heard those were more retreads of like his familiar territory.
Yeah, I think. I think that definitely has something to do with it. It occurred to me that Dink might be Fuckhead, but it's one of those things where I'm just like, well, maybe.
Yeah.
my main, and I consider arguing about Game of Thrones to be a literary argument.
Mm-hmm.
And my main literary argument with, everyone for the last 3 weeks has been like, but there's nothing to support it in the text or like in the actual universe of the show.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm like, there's not enough to support it in the text that they're the same person.
Sure.
It's definitely possible.
Oh, you just mean with like fans, like with theories. I think it's just like an extra element you can enjoy, but I'm,
he might be.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to crack that.
There's lots of fuckheads also. So
yes,
it's Fuckhead is the name of the
protagonist of Jesus.
By the way,
I assumed he was a character.
What do you guys make of all the spiritual? It's particularly evident in Starlight Over Idaho. What do you guys make of that? I mean, clearly from the fact that I chose to open with that reading, which. It's good. I just feel silly reading sometimes.
I mean, I'll take over reading if you want. I love the sound of my own voice. I was not super surprised by the depth of it, but also like the immaturity of it, I think.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Catholic school a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's like that may have been why it worked for me, is because like I knew people like this, where they're like, withdrawal symptoms are pretty severe, I've never taken an abuse, but everyone who was taking it seemed extra miserable, I've just listened to people rant like this, or write this weird outsider art poetry of, like when they do it, it's a word salad. When he does it, it's great literature.
Yeah.
But
it was like, this is a really good version of a bad thing that I
want
to read normally. This probably was my first, like, this guy's done LSD thought was, like, reading this.
Because
it's like, everything is so, momentous and, like, Jesus and the devil or whatever could be personifications of whatever, you know, thing is going on in your life.
Yeah.
You know, and so I wondered if, like, the Ann abuse, if this really did happen to Dennis Johnson, like, maybe it triggered some acid flashbacky things, but I don't really know what Ann abuse, like, what the chemistry of it is, but...
It makes you sick if you drink.
Oh, is that what it does?
Yeah.
That's kind of fucked up.
Kinda. Yeah. It's like you know those like ink tags on bank money. So if a bank gets robbed, it gets splattered. It's like that, but inside your body.
Oh, that sounds messy and hurt. Do you just, like, vomit immediately?
I don't know. I never had to take... I assume so, yeah. I heard people tell stories about it, but I never...
Your insides turned to bees, like...
Most of the people that were there with me were there for heroin and meth, which... I was like... Yeah, I was... I felt like a poser there. I was like, I just kind of, like, got in trouble, and... Yeah. Uh-oh.
My teacher made me come. Yeah.
That's basically, it's like, I got arrested at CU, and then I was like, ugh, I gotta, sounds better than going to jail. Remember how scared I was in jail? Well, my chapstick, speaking of things dying, my chapstick, used it all to the end. It was a solid two. Because for recovering addicts, like, the idea of a spiritual experience is...
Mm-hmm.
Real key, but this is, like, a terrifying spiritual experience. I don't know if anybody wants this.
I think it's more realistic, though, to someone's state of mind. If they're, I mean, number one, if they're an alcoholic or if they're an addict of some kind and they're coming off something and trying to, because when you are drinking that much, or I assume, I am probably one of the only people that went to college in New York City and never did coke. But I imagine, like, it's, your entire life just feels like it's not real. And so, I don't know, it doesn't surprise me that that's what's going through someone's head when they're, like, trying to dry out.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, There were plenty of times in my life where I felt like I was going fucking insane and no one knew it except me, and I had to figure out a way to tell someone, like, hey, I think I'm losing it.
Yeah.
And I was never, like, on heroin or anything, you know?
Yes.
I was probably an alcoholic when I lived in New York, but I was actually pretty okay then.
It's that city makes it pretty easy to function as a, like...
Subways and
DUIs are a major intervention.
It's
bars are open till 4 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and also just everyone else is doing it.
Yeah,
or worse. You know, I remember when I was working at the Strand, we used to. There was a liquor store that was a block away, and. Oh, I don't remember her name. I think her name was Joni, actually. Which is also my mom's name. But she would go out on her break when we were, like, closing the store. Because the store was open till, like, 10 o'clock at night. And she would go and get, just, like, a giant fucking bottle of, like, gin or vodka or, like, whatever the hell she felt like getting that night. And we would buy cans of Coke. Empty them out in the bathroom.
Oh, okay.
And then just fill up the cans with, like, whatever booze she had and just drink them all night. Ooh. And then when the store closed, we would go, like, two blocks down to this shit dive bar that, like, everyone at the Strand just went there after work and drank until 4 a.m.
It's probably an Apple store
now. It probably is an Apple store now. I would almost be... glad if it was, because it was a miserable fucking place and terrible things happened there. The one nice thing that happened there, I don't remember his name. Fuck his name. I don't remember his name. But there was, I had, like, just broken up with a guy who also worked there and had a lot of mental health problems and, like, would in the future start stalking me and threatening me, and that's why I moved here.
Oh.
But at the time, it was just that, like, we had just broken up, and me and this other dude that worked there were just outside, and we were shit-faced at this bar, and we were smoking, and, like, something shitty had happened to him, too.
Mm.
I think, like, he was, like, getting thrown out of his apartment or something, and, like, he was, like, a book person. Like, his bed frame was just boxes of books with a mattress on top of it. And he was gay, which kind of came into play later, but we were just like smoking and shit-faced and screaming at each other outside this bar, and this other drunk ass dude just walks up to us and he's like, "Can't you see you guys are meant to be together? Like, just you gotta stop fighting and you have to just kiss and make up. Just please kiss and make up." And we're like, "All right." And then like, yeah, so like we kissed and we're like, "Okay, we made up. We're fine now." And the like drunk guy goes away.
Yeah.
And then like my crazy ex-boyfriend like found out about it the next day and went like apeshit. It was just like, clearly no one cares.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, clearly. Anyway, but yes. I don't remember where I was going with that.
I don't
story.
Either, I'm sorry.
No, I was just borderline an alcoholic. Yeah. And I never went to AA.
You want to do final impressions or also reds and then plugs? Sound good?
Yeah.
Works for me.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hit me with your final impression.
I was very skeptical after the first story, but like you were saying about like there'd just be a sentence fragment or something that would just hit me, and I kept like dog-earing pages because I was like, I love that one, and you know, I don't know exactly.
That's a library book.
I'm gonna undog ear it. I do undog ear it. I'm on a book club podcast, so it's worth the sacrifice. And half of the library books, like, it read once, it seems like, and never checked out again. So I'm not.
I just flipped him off.
It's not the librarian's fault.
Kenneth,
it's,
I just flipped Nate off.
It just feels like every time I just see people running DVDs, but
yeah,
that's anyway. It's just my way of feeling superior to everyone else at the library, but he's like just a great sentence by sentence writer where it's, I do want to read more, like, maybe I will feel like, oh, this is an early 20s book if I read Jesus on whatever else, but like he's got a very unique style, and I'd read more of him, see if he's misogynist all the time or if I can still enjoy him now that I see that perspective on it. But
I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily. If it is, it's only passively. So it's just because it's like it's.
Is that better though?
Not really.
Like, is it? You know, is actively hating someone better or worse than not acknowledging them?
Yeah, you know? I mean, no, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
No, and it's one of those things where, I mean, like, you're right, Nate. Like, he writes beautiful fucking sentences. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of these stories are really good. It's just that is a shortcoming of his that I find disappointing. Even though I still really like him.
Yeah, it was probably a blind spot on my part. And I know Jonathan Franzen's also considered one of the problematic people, so I should have known.
God, so
he has a blurb on the back. I've never read anything by him.
I like the
clearly a publisher's choice.
I like the corrections, and I like freedom.
When I've heard it's good,
But I've heard that the one after that's real bad. I don't know. I think that because these are also supposed, even though they're long for short stories, they're meant to just be vignettes and little glimpses at a life. That didn't bother me so much, but I am having to examine my. You know, because even though I reject some of those, like, MFA-based ideas about literature, I'm still subject to them sometimes, where it's like, when I was reading this, I was like, oh, I'm reading a great writer, you know? this is important stuff, this is real, you know? And so, yeah, I get swept up in that and be like, yeah, you know what, they are all wives. They're all wives, and none of them really say anything or get, like, much insight.
Well, and also, I mean, that's a bias that I have, too, with just like the MFA pipeline and all that. Yeah. I mean, I work with independent authors, you know, and I self-published one of my own shits on Kindle. Like it's, but it's one of those things where I still like the things that I like follow on Instagram is like publishing houses and like bookstores.
Yeah.
You know, to see what's coming up that I should be reading.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I'm going to read my friend's books too, but it's, you know, it's a very funny place to be in where you are aware of your own biases, but you know, and you can kind of feel your behavior still being influenced by them. And I think that everyone sort of has that.
Yeah.
In some way or another, you know. But yeah, it's, I might actually go back. One of the things that I immediately wanted to pick up after this was, I bought Bryce Meurer's book, Stupid Flowers. Cool. At like a local magazine event, last week. And that was like that. And the two books of Dennis Johnson's poetry were like the things I wanted to pick up right after this. I didn't do any of those things, but that was what I wanted.
I think also with it's, this is more like that genre of hard scrabble realism. It commands more respect, I think, than genre stuff. And I also don't care for that double standard. And even though I fall prey to, because like I would say like, realism is like a landscape painting where it's like you admire it because it looks like it, the thing it's supposed to depict. Mm-hmm. And really good ones capture a unique facet of it. Like, oh, the glimmer of the sunlight on the Alpine Lake. But, you know, I prefer, it's like you're making something up.
Mm-hmm.
Go nuts. Like, you know, give me a Dali. Give me a...
Well, but also there is something about like the difference between this and Nico Walker or
you tell
no,
Nico
I've completely
Walker
forgotten
was,
his name. But
Nico
like all
Walker
of the,
was going for this.
Well, and it's one
former
of those things where you say
subject.
Like you know hard scrabble, you know, kind of gritty, which is the subject matter, but the writing itself is so light and so soft and so that it's not just that.
Yeah.
Like that's I think what set like what makes this like literature or whatever.
Yeah.
Instead of just a pulp novel.
Yeah.
You know? And that I don't know, that to me and also the fact that he's just all the time, constantly, everything he writes, he's writing about death.
Yes.
Which is the only thing that matters anyway.
You can't get away from it.
Yeah, like that's, I think those two things to me are like the things that sort of I forgive everything else, you know?
We're all in pretty much unanimous agreement that he's a great writer. One of the interviews I read with him, he's like, because he's done playwriting, he's in journalism, he's just done poetry, and he was like, you know what, I just write sentences. Like,
yeah.
And then in this book where he talks about, he's like, writing is easy. It's just like filming the clouds and calling it a movie.
Fuck off, dude. Come on.
But it kind of is. Like,
I mean,
when you're writing something and you know it's good. I don't know. When you're writing something and you know it's good, it's just like, yeah, I don't know.
I mean,
I make
maybe
that sound whenever I write, just the entire thing. Even if it's hours of writing.
I wanted to bring it alive for the list, my pain of mind.
I make when I write. Yeah, like, click, clack, click, clack, click, clack. Dring! Yeah. No, I mean, first of all, fuck off, because it's not that easy. I think, actually, I mean, Brian and I argue about this all the time, because he writes amazing first drafts, and it's not okay to say that I hate my husband, so I'm not going to. But I'm extremely jealous of it. I really envy it. And of course, he thinks all his first drafts are crap.
Yeah.
So it's, it's a matter of perspective, I guess, but, like, fuck off, it's not that easy. Like,
yeah.
It's not that easy for anyone, because also, like, yeah, he writes amazing first drafts, it takes him an hour to write half a page.
Yes.
And that's why, you know?
I mean, I don't think that it's easy, in the sense that nothing's really easy. Like,
yeah.
I think being a writer is easier than being, like, a construction worker.
That's because you don't know how to construct.
I've done landscaping and I've been a writer. Writing is way easier.
You get to sit down.
As long as it gets done, you can work at it whenever you like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't need to be at a place at a time. Oof, I hate being at a place at a time. It is my least favorite thing.
I kind of feel like the opposite. I don't know. I've done a lot of, like...
It's more ego bruising for sure than, like, construction work.
Yeah. I've done a lot of, like, fix-it type stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, a lot of my big and small projects. I'm like, I really enjoy that. I'm not very good at it.
Yeah, no, I hate doing it, and I'm not good at it.
But, like, I really love doing it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I still have nightmares about building my dresser, which took... I put the wrong screws in, like, four different times. You had to unscrew and re-screw, and
yeah.
It was just, like... Took me 2 days, and it should have taken, like, 3 hours, and I was just...
I mean, in my nightmares, people are trying to kill me.
That's an amazing nightmare. It's just trying to build a dresser and failing and re-screwing and unscrewing and rewriting the same thing.
Well, and you have all of these components, and you're just trying to figure out how to fucking put them together in the right order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You feel dumb the entire time, and, like, you should have this figured out. And, yeah.
And then you go sit in a corner and cry and maybe eat some ice cream for a while and forget about it.
Way too many breaks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I don't write, like, creatively satisfying stuff that often, but when I do write creatively satisfying stuff, it just flows out. Like...
Yeah, okay. I was going to say, what about...
I write the Victorian... Yeah, I write Victorian erotica every month. And that's my favorite... Like, that's a joy to write. Writing Westward's a joy to listen to, let me tell you. The Westward stuff's a real slog.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's not enjoyable.
Is that because it's work and you have deadlines and you don't get to do whatever you want? Or is it...
Because, okay. I'm not doing the... lists anymore because on April Fool's I wrote a satirical list.
Oh shit.
Where I was like, the comedy show at the brewery between two other breweries, hosted by the creep who's, you know, who's hounding the token female with creepy messages. Like,
they didn't care for that.
And they were like, not only were they, well, we don't want to confuse people. Also,
because that could be real.
Yes. And it was a bunch of things, like, this, you know, the gallery opening from the street artist who wants to make money now. You know, like, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they were like, it made us kind of question the whole list. And it was like, is that what we sound like? So then they didn't do them for 2 weeks, and then they gave them to, like, a new writer looking for stories. Which I'm very happy to do, because now I can...
Well, now you don't have to do it
anymore.
At least
a little more interested in, but...
But also, it's... I mean, yeah, that kind of sucks.
They're not fun to write. I've been doing them for, like, 2 years, and I'd gotten really burnt out on them.
Yeah, that's understandable.
But, yeah, writing, like, creative writing, and that's something I was reading an interview with Tayari Jones, former author of a former book club subject, An American Marriage, and she was saying, don't write for money. You write for money, then you're going to hate writing, and I'm like... That's true. Yeah. I don't hate creative writing, but...
I think it's true for... I don't know.
But I never feel like I'm devoting enough time to it. Like, Victorian erotica is a goof. So, you know, I'm just trying... literature! If I may, I think it's a pretty incisive parody of historical Victorian fiction. Also, there's always a sly reminder of colonialism. I really enjoy doing it, and... If I'm the only person who thinks it's funny, then at least someone does. But
is that for a podcast? Or you
it's for Queen City Companion, which, speaking of, we can segue into plugs.
Yeah, let's do it.
Next one's May 2nd?
2nd, yeah. And Byron's going to be there reading more Victorian erotica. Yeah, it's going to be great.
The second part of the multi-part last chapter. anything else?
Do I have anything else? If you like zombie stories, go on Amazon and look at my long short story called Us What's Left, A Zombie Story, available on the Kindle. And...
support
libraries. Register to vote. Support yeah. libraries. Don't dog-ear your books.
Okay. I'm normally really, like, mean all about books.
I'm calling you out, Nate.
This is an exception. I'm like, if I spill even, like, a drop on a book, I'm instantly like, ugh.
Where'd
like
you get that from? At anything?
Yes.
Oh, fuck them anyway.
Yeah, I wondered. I was like, did you get anything, too, or no?
No. DPL. I mean, no, they're awesome. I used to work there, actually. Cool they're events. Really cool, yeah.
I'm interested I just in like to make library politics.
That's my new podcast, Library Politics. It's going to be me yelling into a microphone for 2 hours, and no one's going to listen to it except my cats.
You'll listen to it.
I'll listen to it. That's true.
Agree with everything. I turned my phone off, so I'm like blanking things, but I'm going to be on Zeke Carrera's like block party.
Okay,
thing
Saturday, May 11th. Yeah. I tried to remember dates today because I'm always terrible at this.
I'm on the one with John Novosad. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I, too, am on the Denver Comedy Block Party, Saturday, May 11th. We are doing a special edition of Designated Drunkard. I will also be at the Southwest Chief Comedy and Bicycle Festival in Trinidad, Colorado. I'll be there on May 3rd and 4th, but it goes from the 2nd to the 5th. Should be a good time. I'm going to perform at a funeral home and a prison.
That's so awesome. I'm very impressed.
Very Dennis Johnson.
Yeah. We'll see. It's in the afternoon. It's outside. It's during the day. It's got to be PG-13. I have no idea what material to do. But we'll see. I got to make sure to not have any weed in my bag when I go in. You get searched when you go in. I understandably. And then, yes, Queen City Companion.
Yeah.
Thrilling extra chapter of The Passions of Comtesse du Maurier. Come hear me do a lot of bad accents. Also Reds this month. Jen probably only has the meaningful Reds. Ones.
Nate, did you read anything else this month?
Like 500 pages of The Count of Monte Cristo. I was trying to catch
up. Wow.
Awesome. What did you think?
I really liked it. I lost it. And you're going to be extra mad at me as a librarian because it's a library book. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to go buy it and hopefully they'll like take my bot version. Because I still want to finish it.
Do you remember the edition?
They usually will just take a new copy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Is it DPL?
No.
Anything.
I think it's anything.
They're pretty lenient about that stuff. Okay. I think they were like one of the first districts to get rid of fines too.
Okay. Yeah,
so you'll probably be okay.
Sweet. But I liked what I read. Like I was surprised how like modern it is readable and it was good. It's a classic I was really enjoying, but I lost it. I'm gonna forget what's happening and try to jump back in.
You should see if you could stop by Kilgore to get a used copy.
There might be one upstairs.
Yeah, I'll check here and then also Kilgore. Yeah.
There might be one up here. There's weird random shit here.
Yeah, it's hard to shop for books here. Comics, especially new stuff. Comics are it's where I go for that.
Well, and they have a lot of like local zines, local authors, because they buy. Like local authors' books for consignment and shit. But also, there's like a lot of really weird,
just random
sci-fi and fantasy novels, like the little mass markets. Mm-hmm. I always find like weird shit when I'm here.
Also Reds.
So I actually read the original book club book for this month, which was Becoming by Michelle Obama. and it was the. It was boring because it was written for a white audience. But also,
book is kind of boring.
I know. Every political book is kind of boring. The one thing that was really interesting about it was that she basically got roped into, like, actively campaigning.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the first time around. It was, like, really, really important. And then she did so much shit at the White House... that she like had to hire her own staff.
Mm-hmm.
She did not get paid for any of it. She worked her ass off for 10 years
yeah.
mm-hmm. for no pay. Yeah.
It's insane. Just like the inequality goes on.
Well, and it, like, it's one of those things where at one point she says, like, well, there's no official job description for First Lady, so there's not a salary that comes with it. But then in, like, the next chapter, she's like, well, someone, you know, in the White House like, basically told me, well, you're expected to host all of these dinners and galas and balls and all this shit. Yeah. It's like, that sounds like a fucking job description to me. Like, I don't know what planet these fucking people live on. That, like, you know. Anyway. So that was boring. So then I read What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker by Damon Young, who is, I think, he's one of the founding editors of Very Smart Brothers. I think he's also an editor at The Root now.
Okay.
That was really funny. It's basically a memoir and essays. And he talks a lot about, some shit that I have, like, don't know anything about, like basketball and shit. Mm-hmm. But he also talks a lot about, like, anxiety and just nerdy stuff and, like, you know, being a young black man in America.
Sure.
And, like, there was one essay that he wrote that was, like, it was one of the last ones, but it was, like, he plays, like, a pickup basketball game every week. This game has been going on for, like, 30 years, and, like, this group of guys that he plays with is, like, almost all white dudes,
mm-hmm.
but it's a really good group, and it's, like, always a good game. And just the way that he felt still going to play right after Trump was elected, when, like, he knew, like, one of the best players mm-hmm. that he always, like, would pick for his team or whatever voted for Trump.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it's just really, really interesting. And then I feel like I read something else. Oh, yeah, the thing I picked up right after this was Dragonfly and Amber, which had been in my to-read pile for, like, a month.
And what's I hadn't the name of the author? Yet.
That is Diana Gabaldon. That is the second book in the Outlander series, and it's fucking awesome. Okay. It's, like, 700 pages, and I don't care because it's awesome. Like, I will probably have it read in a week. It's the most fun book about the colonization of the Scottish Highlands that I've ever read.
All right.
my stepdad is Scottish and is obsessed with that series. Like, I think he's
read all of them. Is he really? Yeah. Good for him. Yeah. That's awesome.
I think he's read everything that's out or whatever. Didn't that's they, like, awesome. Make a TV series?
They did.
Yeah, it's super hot. Sorry.
Yeah. Hot. Okay. They watched that too.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of, like, bodice ripping, and I've watched a couple episodes and it wasn't grabbed right away, but I should maybe try the books. That might be a better...
Yeah, I've only seen the first couple of episodes of the TV series, but I also started watching it after I started reading the books.
Okay.
And so, like, there's a lot of shit they cut out in the beginning that you... Like, you just don't... You already know where you are if you've read the books.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's better to... But also, there's, like, a lot of history and stuff that, like, you don't really get from the TV show. Like, the books are better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. The big, real highbrow selection for me this month, Detective Comics issue 1000.
Hell yeah.
Which, it was fun. It was, like, a retrospective of each era of Batman. Hmm. They had a bunch of, like... Great writers from over, like, Denny O'Neill, who hasn't written anything for Batman since the 80s, probably. They also had Kevin Smith, which, you know. He's still around.
All right. That's another thing that I loved when I was too young to know any better, was, like, Kevin
similar,
Smith
my Kevin Smith phase is fully over, but
Smile,
I did.
You're going to go on my Instagram.
I did enjoy it. Okay, next month's book... is, I always get the name confused. It's
a sci-fi novel that I'm really excited about, and there's Red a lot of
Leopard,
purple on the cover.
Black Wolf?
That sounds right.
Or Black Leopard, Red Wolf? I know they're...
Black Leopard, Red Wolf.
Black Leopard, Red Wolf
by
Marlon
James. It's the first in a trilogy.
Yeah, so I'm very excited. We're getting back into genre stuff next month.
Hey, who's going to be on?
We haven't decided yet. R. Allen Brooks couldn't do it.
I can dig someone up.
Okay. He's teaching a class. He's writing a book. He's way too busy.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. What class is he teaching?
It's on, like, Afrofuturism. I think it's for Metro.
Oh, fucking nice. Just
like, I'd like to go audit that. I love that,
That's
dude.
That's awesome.
All right. That has been it. That's been the Mutiny Book Club podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Read a fucking book, you dum-dums. Bye.
Bye.
Mew, 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 book club. Mew, 10-10, book club. Mew, 10-y, book club. Book, book, book. Mew, mew, mew. 10-10-10. E-E-E. Book, 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 book.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.